When the world is calling, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, including Montreal, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, travel from Columbus is closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Stop laughing. This is erotic.
I'm on a new medication, and I think it's making me hallucinate.
I would have been a Ted Bundy victim.
Yeah. I had no idea that so many people out there felt the same way I did. Now I want a pina colada.
An acquired taste.
This is an Acquired Taste podcast. I'm Kathleen Heaney, your pool party hosting, lavender-flavored everything eating. I accidentally sent my friend Bethany a full nude friend.
And I'm Bethany Watson, your apartment leaving, house renting, I need to lease a car, but there apparently aren't any cars available right now, friend.
And every week, Bethany and I get together to discuss our lives, what's weird in the world, and we invite you to join us. This week, we're talking about
the fascinating science and art of forensic facial reconstruction.
Whoa.
AKA, how do they know what a face looks like based on only the skull?
That is a science that I've never really thought too deeply about.
If you've ever watched Forensic Files or any of those true crime shows, sometimes they will show someone in a lab with a skull and little rubber dots all over the skull's face in different thicknesses.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how do they know what the thickness should be and where? And I'm going to tell you, it's so fascinating.
That's really cool. I feel like this maybe could have been a career for you or something.
I'm going to try it.
You know,
I'll tell you
I think about often when people go missing, especially children, and they do the facial reconstruction. Like, this is what this child who went missing at 4 probably looks like at 16. And this is what they probably look like at 25.
Yes.
And imagine you're found and you see the mock-ups that they did of you and they're hideous.
They're awful.
And you're gorgeous. Like, I would be so offended.
I would be more offended if the pictures were gorgeous.
And you were ugly.
And I was like, oh, that's what my potential was?
All right, Bethany, I am talking about foot doctor horror stories.
The foot is arguably the grossest part of the body.
Or the most beautiful, depending on who you're talking to.
I think mostly the grossest. I think the things that can happen to your foot, I feel like they're more varied than the things that can happen to the rest of your body.
I had a history teacher who, in high school, when anybody wore flip-flops, and that was the era of Old Navy starting to come out with flip-flops, so everybody was wearing them. Or as my dad used to call them, shower tongs.
Tongs?
Tongs. He used to be like, why are you wearing shower tongs to school?
Tongs are what you use on in a kitchen.
No, shower tongs, because it's the tong of your foot. It looks like a tong, like a Bethany.
I was always told they were called thongs, but then that's what you wear when you want to be sexy or not have a visible panty line.
Or maybe he was saying togs?
That also doesn't make sense.
I don't know. I'm really, really quite pleased that I never heard my dad say the word thong. But the teacher used to yell at us, do you know this school floods with sewer water? So you're essentially walking with bare feet on dried shit.
Wow.
It's like, okay.
He's not wrong.
I know, Mr. Petruso, but like, you know, you can be a little bit softer about it.
A little bit aggressive.
I know. Anyway, Bethany.
Yes.
I'm hosting a pool party this weekend.
Yes.
And I'm here to tell you, not that it matters to you, because I know you weren't coming in the first place.
I'm not good at attending parties.
I know. But I'm changing the date because of rain.
Oh, when is the new date?
The new date is July 4th.
Let me check.
Yeah, I know. You're very busy and schedule.
Well, July 4th, is that a Sunday?
It is a Monday.
That's a Monday. Aren't we recording?
No, it's a holiday, Bethany.
Are you sure?
But I know. When you work for yourself, you forget that there are holidays.
Yeah, I know.
And Bethany really forgets that there are holidays because both her and Dennis work for themselves.
Yeah.
But I still have sort of like a fish line to the outside world because Neil gets these holidays off.
Yes.
And there will sometimes be a holiday and you're like, aren't we recording? I'm like, no, Bethany, Audio Boom is closed. The world is closed.
Yeah.
You and I are not working today.
Yeah. It's wild. More often there are holidays and we're still like, welp, we still got to get an episode out.
Columbus Day? We don't get off Columbus Day.
No, are you kidding me?
No. I think last year we were recorded on Labor Day. We labored on the day you're not supposed to labor.
We absolutely did. I also think that we should choose a day like Arbor Day that no one observes, but we staunchly observe it.
Sounds good to me.
Like, we turn our emails off. Uh-huh. We have like our bounce back email is like, in observance of Arbor Day, yeah, we are absolutely unequivocally closed.
Yes.
And we will not be able to get back to you today as we are strictly observing a work-life balance on this, our Arbor Day.
In honor of National Everybody Should Eat Spaghetti Day,
yeah,
we will be back on our email tomorrow.
Yes, we are out of pocket.
Like, what does that even mean?
Okay, I think it means two different things.
Okay.
So I had a boss who always used it to mean that he was like on the golf course not checking his phone.
Uh-huh.
I'm out of pocket.
So his phone's not in his pocket.
Correct.
Okay.
But I've also heard it in terms of like, you're crazy. You've lost your mind.
I've never heard it that way. I always thought the pocket was like the pocket of land where you get reception.
Oh, I think... I don't know. I think out of pocket now means like, yeah, like you're going crazy.
No, it doesn't.
I think so.
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you Google, what does out of pocket mean? Oh, here's another way you can use out of pocket. It's about having lost money in a transaction. Did you have to take it out of pocket?
Yes. Or like, I paid for this out of pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that doesn't have anything to do with not answering your emails.
I know. I think my boss made up that one, but I always used it for that because it made sense. He's out of pocket. His purse is in his briefcase. His briefcase is in the golf cart.
Okay, well, here's another one. A slang term for out of pocket is when someone is wild, ridiculous, and extreme.
Yeah, see that? Yes, that's the yes.
Okay, and now here's another one. What does out of pocket mean at work? In this context, out of pocket means that you are taking money out of your pocket to cover expenses,
which is unfair.
Okay, so what does it mean when you're on vacation?
I think it means you don't have your phone with you.
But people used it before having cell phones.
I think in that case, it means they took the money that work should have paid and they paid it out of pocket. Who would have thought that this was going to be the biggest problem you and I had today?
I know.
Speaking of money, actually.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I do want to give a word of advice. Uh-huh. So as I am moving, I am packing things up and I'm deciding what to keep and what to throw away, what to sell.
Yeah.
What to donate.
Yeah.
You know, et cetera. Uh-huh. And I just want to give a tip to people who are like me, who just have a touch of the doomsday prepper in them, enough that you are hiding money. Make a master list of places you have hidden money.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise, you are going through every single book you're going to donate, wondering if this is the one that you put $100 in, like the spine of it.
No, you really should never put money in books.
But it's a great place to hide secret things in like the spine. Like, you cut the spine,
yeah,
cover off.
Yeah.
You put the thing in, you glue it back on. Now, but you also, yeah, I've said this before, I have this couch that I redid. I'm about to rip all of the upholstery off that couch because I am 16% sure that I hid money in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably didn't, but I'd be afraid forever if I sold it.
This is precisely why when Neil and I were getting a new couch, I offered up our old one to his family.
Yeah.
And which his sister took because she had a room that needed to be furnished, because I lost a gold earring in 2017 and I'm 96% sure that it is in that couch.
Yeah.
So I figured if one day his sister finds the earring,
yes,
she can return it to me, of which a stranger would just toss in the trash.
Or keep it and melt it down for bullets for the revolution.
It was a very small year. If a mouse is having a revolution, maybe.
So I saw on the very accurate, yeah, web Instagram account, 5 Minute Hacks, or 5 Minute Crafts, rather, that different places you can hide money in your house. And one of them was in the handle of your broom. Roll up some money, put it in the handle of your broom.
Oh, a plastic broom.
Yeah. But like, again, you better remember you put it there.
Yeah, yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, and it's not just $5. Like, I remember when I was hiding money, I was making money.
Yeah.
And so I was hiding. I would take like $500 and hide it somewhere.
Oh, my God.
Now, I know I've gone back and spent all of it.
All of it. Because,
you know,
yeah,
times are different. But.
So I follow a bunch of thrifter accounts,
yeah,
on Instagram, or different people who go to Goodwills. And it's really interesting when they live in different parts of the country, what sells there.
Totally.
And what people give up.
Yeah.
And the other day I saw this reel where this thrifter bought a ski jacket.
Yeah.
Ski jackets are prime places where people leave money.
Oh.
And she pulled out like almost $100.
Oh, that's good to know.
Because you know when you're on the ski slopes, everything that you carry with you has to be in a pocket in your jacket.
Yep.
And of course you forget that stuff is in there.
Completely. It's nuts how many times like I have taken a winter jacket out.
Yeah.
And I never find money because I never leave money in my pockets. But I always find a chapstick I forgot that I had. Yeah. Or I find, you know, what else have I found? Earbuds.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Last year, I stopped my mom. So this is another place you should never store things. And I do all the time.
Yeah.
I store things in garbage bags.
Kathleen Heaney.
Okay. Well, when you need to keep like a moth out of an item, a garment in a pinch, put it in a garbage bag.
I'm yelling at you at the same time that I know I have a comforter I want to sew up in a garbage bag in my hallway. Yeah.
Yeah. So my mom also does that. That's where I got it from.
Yeah.
And she put all of her good linens in a garbage bag when her house was being renovated. This is what happened. We were walking to the Goodwill, like, you know, the kind in the back of the parking lot where you dump it into the big container.
Yeah.
And I just, for whatever reason, I opened up the bag that I was holding and I said, Mommy, I don't think you want to donate this. Like, aren't these grandma's old vintage dinner napkins? And she was like, oh my God. So, gentle listeners, whenever you're about to donate something, open up that garbage bag and double check what is in there.
Or get a different color garbage bag for the stuff you're going to hang on to and not the stuff that you're going to throw into a fire.
Yeah. Anyway, Bethany, good luck moving.
Oh, hey, thanks. Kathleen, I love riding a bike.
Yeah.
But it makes me sweat.
Yeah.
And I don't want to show up someplace gross and pouring in sweat. And so when I found out we were partnering with Lectric e-bikes, I freaked out because this is all of the benefits of riding a bike, but not sweating as much because it's doing the work for you.
Yes. Lectric e-bikes is the fastest growing e-bike company in the United States. They're affordable.
Yes.
They're customizable.
Yes.
They ship for free, fully assembled.
Yep.
You can save on gas, which is super important right now. You can save the planet and you can explore your community or commute on your electric e-bike.
Moving out of the city, now we're going to be living in the country.
Yeah.
I am going to be using my electric e-bike so much because I can charge my bike up and I can pedal as much as I want. This is the thing, is you can put it on different settings. So it's doing all the work. It's doing a little bit of work. Maybe if you're going up a hill, you still want to get that little workout in, but you want a little push up. You can change the levels. And right now I'm riding it like to go to grocery stores that are a little bit further away, but I'm going to be riding it everywhere.
I love when you're on an e-bike and you're going up a hill and you're right, Bethany, you're like, I want to like maintain the same sort of burn that I'm feeling in my legs, but I don't want to push myself. And so the mechanisms of the bike kick in and you can feel the bike starting to work harder so you don't have to work harder.
Totally. And also I'm obsessed with the fact that this bike folds in half.
Yeah.
So there's this little like lever thing that you pull out. The bike folds in half so you can fit it into a regular car. You don't have to have a rack on the top of your car or a big truck. It's super duper easy and it's like one snap.
Yes.
You know, it's like bing.
The battery is hidden away and there's an LCD display featuring the speed, your range, your adjustable power level, thousands and thousands of raving 5-star reviews.
And don't worry, you can cover up to 45 miles at up to 28 miles per hour on just a 4 to 6 hour charge. So join the affordable e-bike revolution, especially right now when gas is so expensive.
Yeah.
Go to electricebikes.com and use the code TASTE to get a free foldable, mountable bike lock with any bike purchase.
That's a free bike lock when you use the code TASTE at LectricEbikes.com.
Okay, so Kathleen, you just looked up and started laughing at me.
Yeah, because you were holding a pencil or a pen to your face, tracing the corner of your eye outward.
Yeah, so here's what I was doing.
Okay.
My topic today is forensic facial reconstruction. I.e., have you ever watched like a true crime something or other and you see a skull with like little, they look like little foam dots sitting all over and they have little different numbers written on them?
Oh, yeah. When they're trying to figure out what the person looks like.
Exactly. I've always wondered, how do they figure out, how can you tell just from a skull what a full human face looks like?
Yeah, you're right. How do they tell?
And what the hell are those little foamy markers that they have? You know, if you don't know what we're talking about, it's like if you took a rubber tube.
Yes.
that was full all the way through. So it was just like a round piece of rubber.
Yeah.
And you cut it into little pieces. So you had little tiny rubber cylinders.
Yeah. Like rubber coming out of a toothpaste tube.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you bopped it to different parts of a skull.
Mm-hmm.
And that tells you how thick the skin and the muscle and the fat is on that part. So how do you figure that all out?
Yeah. Kind of like the pressure points of the face or
totally,
whatever.
Totally. Uh-huh. So Kathleen, I'm going to teach you how to do forensic facial reconstruction.
That's amazing. Bethany, this could, listen, gentle listeners, if you have an impressionable teen.
Oh, yeah.
Or a young adult listening to this.
Yep.
This could be their career.
Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
So the reason I thought of this is because I was just listening to a podcast the other day and I was reminded that, you know, Crystal Head Vodka? It comes in the crystal skull.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So that's Dan Aykroyd's vodka. So 8 years ago.
Wait, what? Actor Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, because he's super into aliens and all of that stuff. That's why he did Ghostbusters.
Oh.
And crystal skulls are a big part of like alien and all that stuff.
Got it.
So 8 years ago, a forensic artist who is based in Scotland did a facial reconstruction on Dan Aykroyd's Crystal Head vodka.
Oh, cool.
He took the vodka bottle and he used all of the little points and the things and he molded it out and it's horrifying.
Yeah, but amazing.
But
too.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah.
So I watched a video from the New York State Museum and the woman was named Gay Mollen and it was so charming because...
That's a great name, by the way.
Yeah, it really is. Because no one that they talked to was comfortable in front of a camera, but they were all going to do this. And they were all game, you know?
No one can make eye contact.
Yeah, they definitely kept looking off and then looking at the camera and kind of looking all around.
And because there's someone in the background going with a thumbs up.
Yeah.
You're doing good. Don't forget to smile.
Yeah. And you're like, so Kathleen,
yes,
here is the old timey way to do this. I think people still use clay. Some people use computers now, but we're going to talk about it with the clay.
Got it.
This is how it was done.
Okay.
Okay. So Kathleen, you're handed a skull.
Yes.
What is the first thing you think you should do if you are a forensic artist who is looking to make this skull into a person?
I measure the skull and then I hit the googs and I'm like, what is the average circumference of a skull for man or woman? Figure out what is the sex of the skull.
Great. And you are absolutely right.
Ooh.
Different skulls from different ethnicities and the different sexes are different.
Wait, let me ask you, do you know what like the circumference of like a male skull is naturally?
Not at all.
Because my husband skull is 23 inches around.
But I think my skull is 23 inches around.
Bethany, Neil was born with such a large head. Everyone in his family has these big heads. It's like their heads equivalent a model's waist.
I feel like I just measured my head the other night because I was selling a hat and I'm pretty sure it's 23 inches around.
You can actually wear hats. Neil can't wear hats.
Really?
Like I once bought him a hat and I had to shop on like extralargehats.com. Hats for big heads.
Big heads. Okay, so here's some of the difference between male and female skulls.
Okay.
So females tend to have round eye sockets with sharp edges along the upper borders.
Okay.
Male skulls tend to have squarer orbits.
Ah.
And the upper part is blunter.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see that.
The jawline. So males tend to have a squarer jawline.
Yeah.
And the line between the outer edge of the jaw and the ear is vertical. So if you measure down, straight down from your ear and then hit the jawline, it's like they hit each other. Line down from the ear hits the jawline.
So kind of like American Dad, you know, who's got a real square face.
Absolutely.
I kind of find American Dad handsome.
Really?
Is that weird?
I don't know. He's too big.
Yeah.
Too
okay.
big.
Okay.
Women, and we're talking sex, you know, like the biological sex.
Yes.
Conversely, women, the jaw is more pointed.
Oh, yes. I know that. I know that real well.
Yes, you sure do.
I have the pointiest jaw ever.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a great jaw.
Oh, thank you.
You have a heart-shaped face. and it slopes from the ear down more.
Okay.
Other things. The skulls for females tend to be smaller and lighter. They tend to have a more rounded forehead. Men tend to have a sloping, less rounded forehead.
Okay. Can I ask you, because there's something that I've always been aware of.
Yeah.
Okay. So 23andMe tells me that I have more genetics in common with our, I don't know, what do you call like our early human ancestors?
Our Neanderthal ancestors?
Yeah. I have more Neanderthal DNA than the average person.
What percent? Do you remember what percentage you have?
I don't know, but it is like enough so that 23andMe is like, whoa. So I have to do this thing where, like, when if I'm going to be on camera or if I'm like taking photos or anything like important,
yeah,
it is really helpful for me if I don't have underlighting to wear the color white,
yes,
to reflect light back up to my face,
yes,
because I'm going to turn to the side and I want you to take a look at my skull, the skull that's over my eye sockets, like,
okay,
you know, where my eyebrows are,
yeah,
because I think that my skull here like protrudes out more than the average person, and
okay,
that is where the Neanderthal DNA comes in.
Sure.
And take my glasses off. I'm going to turn to the side. Do you see what I'm talking about?
It comes out almost not at all.
No. You see how like it how has, I look like a Neanderthal in the eyebrow section of my face?
It has a slight like 1 millimeter protrusion. I think that you're finding another reason to hate your body.
That might be it. But also I have Neanderthal skull
I believe that. Like, I think that's fascinating.
You turn to the side. Let me see.
I think I
take your glasses off. Nope, mine comes out way more. Yours is like a much more attractive, like natural slope.
I think that you're being real mean to Mm-mm. yourself.
No, it's okay.
Okay. So like you're saying, women tend to have a smooth supraorbital ridge. So the brow bone.
Yeah, every woman except for me.
Okay. Men have more of one.
Yeah. You know, before you started talking about this, immediately my first question was that I didn't verbalize. How can you tell what someone looks like by their skull? Because there's all these other things that come into facial, like the shape of your face, like your cartilage and stuff like that. And actually, I never really thought about like the size of the eye socket and the size of the nose socket, because that determines how much cartilage
completely
needs to fill the hole.
And we're going to talk about it. There's so many mathematical measurements that are based off of things the skull shows you. You can figure out how old they are based on the sutures, you know, those little jagged lines that run along the top of your skull all over the place. The older you get, the more they fuse. So depending on how fused they are, you can get a general idea of how old this person was.
Yeah, because like when a baby is born, their skull isn't really fused
yet. No, it's like it's floating all over the place.
So it might be accurate to call somebody who's old, an old curmudgeon stuck in their ways.
Yeah.
It would be accurate to say that they have a hard head.
They have a hard head. Their sutures are fused.
So fused.
Yeah, so very fused. You want to learn as much as you can about where they found this.
Yes.
So the example that Gay used is that they had been excavating the land of what used to be basically a poor house. They called it an almshouse. So this is where people who couldn't afford rent would go and they would work and they would live in horrible conditions.
Yeah.
And then when they died, they were sort of like thrown into a graveyard.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so they know that skulls found there are probably going to be of a lower class of a quote unquote working class. The woman they found, they saw that her bones had arthritis. Mm. They saw that she'd had a couple of breaks in her face. So her nose was broken.
Oh.
She lost several teeth. So it shows that like she couldn't afford dental care. You learn a ton about the person.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, when you are part of the lower class, maybe your nutrition isn't quite as good and it affects like how much you grow and stuff like that.
Yeah, completely. Okay, so then what you're going to do, Kathleen, because some of these skulls are fragile and you don't want to be messing around with a real skull.
Uh-huh.
You cast the skull.
Hmm.
So that you have a fake one that you're working on. You're not hammering little nails into the real skull.
I feel like you would have been excellent.
Oh, I would have loved doing this.
At this.
I would have, Kathleen, it's like the perfect combination of art and science.
Yes.
In that there's numbers telling you roughly how and where to put things.
Yeah.
But you also get to be just artistic enough to like be artistic.
Because you like following the rules.
I love a rule.
But also you're very creative.
Thank you.
You know what, Bethany? Your eyes are like lighting up talking about this.
I would love to build a person out of clay?
You know, maybe you should.
I think I kind of want to. So I bought this plastic skull from Michael's last year,
okay,
which I instantly regretted because it doesn't look real at all. Uh-huh. Boy, is it far too light. I think I might get myself some rubber hoses,
okay,
cut them up, tack them onto a face, see what I can do.
Yeah.
I don't know. It can't be that hard, right?
Hey, listen, you haven't announced on the podcast that you're moving yet, but you're moving.
We're moving.
So, Bethany, maybe this is a gateway topic into your next side gig as somebody who is an expert. And I'm not talking about just skeletons.
Yeah.
You could be an expert caster.
I would love to cast anything you give me.
Yeah. Like, remember years ago when, what's that thing? The medallion that I lived in, that old brownstone,
yes,
and the medallion came crashing down.
Yeah. The part that hangs around the chandelier of Kathleen's old house.
Yeah. And chandelier. Listen, it was just a light fixture. It wasn't like a glass chandelier.
It was a chandelier.
Okay. Listen, it was a normal apartment. And, and half of it came down and the other half didn't. It was original to the apartment.
Oh.
So the guy that came in to fix it, he learned his trade doing expert casting at the Museum of Natural History.
Damn.
Where he learned to cast doing bones, recreating dinosaur bones. And then he went off on his own and realized that you could make a lot of money being an artist and caster and plasterer for very old homes and old home restoration. So he chiseled off the other half of the medallion that didn't fall down, took a cast of it, and then recreated the other half based on, and then put it all together.
You know, I think this is amazing. And good for him for figuring out his niche, rich in your niche.
Uh-huh.
I think that if I could do it all over again, from a very young age, I would have started apprenticing at a museum to like learn, because it would either be that or like restoring paintings, you know, but I still want to be like watched while I'm performing because I do need to perform.
Yeah.
And so I would want to be the person who's like behind glass at the museum that people can walk by and see the artisans plying their trade as I like cast a dinosaur bone.
You know, Bethany, if that's not a thing, you should start like, I don't know, writing proposals to museums around the... All right.
How I got into radio. Look, I have no experience, but you know what? I think I can do it.
That's right.
So,
and you were just like, hey, look at me.
Hey, I have no business entertaining this idea, but let's do this.
That's how I started building websites.
Yeah.
I just like, hey, I think I can do this.
And
I just tricked people into thinking I could. And then eventually I learned.
And then you have a career for like 10 years. Okay. So now we're going to talk about this.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're going to look compared to other skulls and you're going to see what's different. So you can be like, oh, this skull is real small compared to all these other skulls, whatever. You're going to find, I love jargon. I love like different trades jargon.
Yeah.
So Kathleen, the next thing you're going to do is find the Frankfurt plane.
Oh, where's the Frankfurt? Is it in Germany?
No, it can be anywhere you are.
Oh, okay.
Kathleen, that's the exciting thing about it.
Okay.
What you're gonna do, find your own Frankfurt plane, Kathleen, right now. So I want you to touch the lower edge of your orbital rim. So like the bottom of your eye bone.
Oh, okay.
You know, where the opening starts.
Yeah.
And then I want you to also find, and you do this at home, dental listener, find the center of your ear hole.
Okay. All right.
And now in your head, trace a straight line from the bottom of your eye socket to your ear hole.
Okay.
Now, what you want to do is on the skull, you would draw a line.
Yes.
And then you take a level and you finagle the skull until that Frankfurt line, that Frankfurt plane is level.
Okay.
And then you like attach a screw or you shove clay up the skull or something to make the skull stay where that line is level.
Okay.
That is called your Frankfurt plane.
Okay.
And what it is an anthropological standard that resembles the natural position in which we hold our heads.
Oh.
And when a skull is photographed, it helps limit distortions. If we know that the skull is at a Frankfurt plane, that's at a standard. Now we can take pictures of it and we know what we're seeing is accurate.
So somebody who was more hunched over might have a different Frankfurt plane. Get out of here.
So like, it's a little bit like, you know how chickens, if you move them around, their heads stay in one place?
Yeah.
So like the more hunched we are, your head still has to sort of, your head's not going to tilt down.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you're hunched over, your head is still going to sort of float in an upright position.
Yes.
That's your Frankfurt plane.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
That's really cool.
Yeah. So that's what you're going to do.
Okay.
Now come the tissue depth markers. These are those little rubber things we're talking about.
Okay.
So in the 1800s, some German anatomists grabbed cadavers. They were like, let's figure out how to like normalize what kind of depth all of our faces, fat and tissues are at, because they wanted to be able to recreate famous like military leaders and famous people's faces.
Oh.
And so they took little pins and they would drive them into the skin of dead faces. And they would like measure how long it took and how deep it was until it hit the bone.
Okay.
So they'd be like, cheeks, more. The forehead, less.
Yes.
And the problem is that when you're dead, your face sort of loses some fluid. And also if you're lying on your back, your face kind of sags backwards.
Yeah.
So it wasn't as accurate.
Yeah.
Now they're doing scans and they can sort of. But the problem still is that when they did scans of people's faces to sort of figure out the depth of the tissues on different parts of the face, everyone is super, super different.
Oh, yeah, super different.
And like how muscular you are or aren't plays a major factor.
Yeah, and how, you know, how fat you are,
how
too.
How fat you are or you aren't. And so there's a chart that they have. So it's like, are you an Asian female? Then this is your tissue depth chart.
Oh.
Are you a black male? This is your tissue depth chart. And each location on the face has a scale, has like a range. Like the tissue is usually from this many millimeters to this many millimeters thick. That's where the artistry comes in. Because then you have to be like, well, what is the rest of this body like? Is this body muscular? Well, then we're going to go to the higher end of that range.
Does that make sense? That makes a lot of sense. Hey, listen, were the Germans like famous for being really good anatomists? I think they were.
Sure. Kilman, Buckley, and Hiss were the ones that I'm talking about here.
Because you know that store in New York where you bought the raccoon skull?
Totally. I think it's called Evolution.
Yes. Yeah, so they have some posters there. They're so expensive, but they're gorgeous. And it's all hand done. And I'm pretty sure it's by German anatomists.
Huh.
And like, you know, people who would also do like detailed illustrations of flowers and insects and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I read this in a book about witches.
It's got to be true.
I'm pretty sure that, you know, the country that was really best at this was the Germans.
Well, and the good news is that, like, these guys were in the 1800s. Yeah. So this wasn't like, we did tests on people who didn't.
Yeah.
Who shouldn't.
This wasn't Nazism. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I'm already way over time.
No, this is so interesting, Bethany. Stop.
Okay. So based on these charts, that's where you're going to put the different tissue markers. And you number them based on what they are in the chart.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
All right. Now you add eyes.
Oh.
This part is alarming, I wrote in my notes.
Okay.
So you just get eyes. Uh-huh. Like you can buy eyes from optometry schools and you just buy eyes.
Sure.
And you measure where the eye should be and then you pluck the eye in there. And now you have this skull with markers all over it staring at you.
I'm just thinking about how I, as someone who likes to drive, got all my pens like lined up with all my different thicknesses.
Yes, yes.
Imagine you're in your forensic facial reconstruction studio. You've got all your eyeballs lined up in the different sizes. And you're like, this one needs a 3, not a 4.
Okay, so you have your tissue depth markers, you have your eyes.
Yeah.
You learn the musculature of the human face, and then you start adding clay or whatever you're going to do in that musculature. So you add the fan muscles to the side of the face, and then you like overlay the muscles.
Yeah.
And you do it up to the thickness that your markers are telling you to go.
Okay.
That's basically what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to talk about the weird parts where you start measuring faces, and this is where it gets fascinating.
Ooh. Okay. Because how beautiful somebody is.
Yeah.
How ugly somebody is.
You're going to be figuring that out. Last night, she did one out of clay, and we found out the woman's eyes were super close together.
Oh my God.
So for example, you're going to look at your zygomaticus, Kathleen. This is the muscle that goes from your cheekbone to the corner of your mouth.
There's a muscle there?
Put your hands on your cheeks and open your mouth wide.
Uh-huh.
You're going to feel two long muscles that go from your cheek to your mouth pop out.
Oh yeah, I do. I feel.
Yep. Uh-huh. That's your zygomaticus.
Oh, okay.
You're going to add one of those to each side of the face.
Okay.
Now let's talk about ears.
Oh, do tell.
Ears are incredibly important to filling out a face. Okay. You have to add them. But you cannot tell what ears look like based on the skull alone.
Yeah, because it's all cartilage.
Yeah, it's all cartilage.
Yeah.
It's all cartilage and rings if you're cool.
And is your lobe attached?
Right. Is it not attached?
Yeah. Is your lobe attached or not attached?
It's not attached.
Oh, mine's attached.
I know. I wish mine was attached.
Oh, opposites attract. Okay.
Yeah. So the chick I watched used just generic ear molds.
Yeah.
Like she would have a small one and a big one.
Yeah.
And depending on the musculature, she would use a small one or a big one.
Now, let me ask you this. Based on the ethnicity of the skull.
Yeah.
Can you like kind of make an educated guess as to what the ears look like?
No one I watched said that.
Yeah.
But I don't, I mean, I don't know if ethnicities have super different ears.
Maybe not. I mean, my ears are extremely small and pointed like an elf.
Yeah. But you are also generally small and pointed. Like you have like tiny fingers, you have like tiny ankles, you are tiny of stature, you're small.
Yeah, yeah.
My ears are apparently a little larger than they should be. And also, one is higher than the other. But I already knew that because glasses are hard for me.
Who told you that?
I measured it because of this. Okay. So here's where you place the ear.
Okay.
There's an ear hole.
Uh-huh.
But then you're going to slant the ear along with the jawline. So however slanted the jawline is, your ear should be slanted. I want you to, gentle listener, if you can, look at yourself in the mirror at this.
Yeah.
The top of your ear should hit along the center of your eye.
Okay.
So draw a line in your head from the center of your eye to your ear. Does your ear, does the top of your ear hit that line?
My ear is actually a little bit above it, and that's the pointed elf part.
Mine is two.
Yeah.
The bottom of your ear.
Okay.
Should hit the bottom of your nose.
Oh.
So draw your nose.
Oh, is this what you were doing before when you were holding a pen to your face?
Yeah. So a line from the bottom of your nose down across your face. My ear is so far below the bottom of my nose, it's not even funny.
Mine's a little bit below.
Mine is like a half a ear below the bottom of my nose, Kathleen.
I'm going to go take a ruler later and an eye pencil and like to start making all these measurements.
Totally.
Because how effed up would it be if your skull was facially reconstructed and the reconstruction was more beautiful than you ever were?
Hurtful, but they would never find me.
You had so much potential.
Yeah, I know.
And then your cartilage and your ear genetics just failed you.
They failed you. Speaking of genetics failing you, let's talk about noses.
Oh, I don't even want to talk about noses, please.
Here's how you figure out what a nose should be.
Okay.
So the nose, you're looking at a skull. There's that big nose hole, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Take a measurement of that nose hole at the widest parts. That's usually near the bottom.
Okay.
That is going to be 2/3 of the width of your nose.
Okay.
So, for example, this woman's measurement was 23 millimeters was the widest part of that nose hole.
Uh-huh.
So 23 divided by 2 gives you 11.5.
Yeah.
So then to be 2/3, to make a full width of the nose, you would add 23 to 11.5 because you want. Because that opening, original opening, is 2/3 of the total. So you want to add 1/3 to
Got
the
it.
Nose hole, right?
Yeah, yeah, math.
34.5 millimeters, that's how wide the nose is going to be.
Hmm.
Now, this is what I understand. And again, math.
Imagine showing up to a rhinoplasty doctor and being like, I did my math.
I did my math.
My nose is all wrong.
God messed up. Okay, so from what I understand, and this could be wrong.
Uh-huh.
You take 1/3 of the nose hole width.
Yes.
Again.
Yeah.
So in
yeah.
this case, 11.5.
Uh-huh.
Divide that in half.
Yes.
That is the width of each nostril. So in this case, it'd be a little over 5 millimeters.
Well, my nostrils are definitely different widths because I was hit in the face as a cheerleader over and over again.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I used to be able to click my nose. And see, this is why I need to go see a nose doctor. I used to be able to click my nose back and forth. Like the cartilage would click in and out.
That's not right.
Yeah, I know.
That's not what's supposed to happen.
I know. Yeah.
Okay. You can tell, Kathleen, from the skull, if a person's nose points up, down, or straight.
Stop. How?
There is a little bone called the anterior nasal spine. Now, if you think about a skull, usually the nose hole is kind of split in two.
Yes.
You know, like a teardrop shape split in two.
Yeah, kind of like a hat, like when you cut a peach in half.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So the bottom of that teardrop, the thing that helps divide it in two is this tiny little bone that pokes out.
Okay.
That is the anterior nasal spine.
Okay.
If that bone pokes straight out, your nose is straight. If it points up, your nose tilts up. If it points down, you got one of them hook noses.
Oh, yeah, I got a hook nose.
Okay.
Thanks, Dad. Which direction do you think Owen?
Will Wilson?
Owen Wilson.
I think his is in a squiggle or some type of corkscrew.
Yeah.
All right, here's some more math.
Okay.
If you want to figure out the philtrum, which is the little groove under your nose that hits the top of your lip.
Yeah.
Okay. Measure the length of that.
Uh-huh.
Multiply it by 3.
Okay.
Place that along the bottom of the nose.
Yeah.
That is how long your nose is going to be.
So I have an extra long philtrum.
I have an extra short philtrum. I had a doctor tell me my philtrum was too short.
Oh, so you're so lucky. My extra long philtrum gives everybody who meets me like first row seats to the inside of my nostrils, including all of the nose hairs up there.
Okay, lastly, you can test this. Is your philtrum the right width?
No, it is not. I can tell you right now.
Your philtrum width should be the space between the middle of your two front teeth.
Oh, but if you have orthodontia.
Well, for example, Tom Cruise's front teeth are off center. So he has one front tooth, which is where the center of his two front teeth should be. He has one front tooth directly under his nose.
Wait, he does? Let me look this up.
I noticed it during a screening of Mission Impossible, the first one. I was in the front row of the theater.
Tom Cruise, front teeth, nose.
Yeah, it's like one. It's one and then one over to the side.
Let me see.
It's like one needs more attention.
That is so weird.
Isn't it crazy?
But he's still so attractive.
So attractive.
So there, when you Google it, there are all these pictures where people draw like a straight line down the center of his face.
Yeah.
And he has a front tooth directly in the center of his face.
Yeah, it's wild.
That's weird.
And the funny thing is, too, is that those aren't his real teeth. Because if you watch The Outsiders, his teeth are effed.
Oh, really?
So these are, I think they're veneers.
Oh, so malpractice.
I mean, it's crazy.
I mean, honestly, a dentist can only do so much
with
the placement of your veneers. Like, they kind of have to go in your normal tooth sockets or whatever.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, Kathleen, taking all of that information plus figuring out, is the bone broken? So this person might have a broken nose.
Yeah.
Like, if that's the case, then that's going to change the nose, whatever.
Yeah.
That is ultimately how you put a face together. Your lips are supposed to be, the thickness of your lips are supposed to be the top of the dentin of your tooth all the way to the bottom of that tooth.
Oh.
But not everyone's are. Some people have super thin lips. Some people have thick lips.
Well, I think my dentin is quite thin and my lips are also quite thin.
Your width lip, your mouth width should be either as wide as the top three teeth on either side or take a line from the center of your eyeball down, and that should hit the corner of your mouth on both sides.
Okay, but it, you know what? It doesn't always work out.
Doesn't always work out, and that's the thing. It's like, that's where some artistry comes into it. But knowing all of these little rules and knowing standards and like generals for each type and class and, you know, geography of people helps them figure out what these faces look like just from a skull, which blows my mind, but actually makes so much sense.
This is... Who even invented this science?
I don't know. It's crazy.
Like, what kind of genius was like, you know, this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah, but it's true and it works.
You had to test on a lot of like just new, freshly dead bodies.
Yeah. Well, and here's the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
If you have a lot of facial reconstruction and plastic surgery during your life, you had better hope you don't go missing. Because they're not going to be able to reconstruct your face at all, you know?
Oh.
It's going to be real different. So I feel like if you have a lot of plastic surgery, you have to be more careful in your day-to-day life that you don't get taken. Like, the onus is on other people to not be assholes, but like, you have to have, like, maybe get a couple of extra Ring cameras because you can't be taken or we won't find you.
Oh, so you know how sometimes on Law and Order they identify the body by the dental records?
Yeah.
Okay, so if you get veneers, let's say you go to Brazil, you get veneers, and your American doctors don't know that you got veneers in Brazil.
You better tell them, and you also better write down the serial numbers of them veneers.
Wait, do veneers go with serial numbers?
Everything has serial numbers, don't you think?
So I was recently at a restaurant
that
had an outdoor area.
Yeah.
And there were all these different fire pits.
Yeah.
Bethany, there were like 12 solo stoves
out
there.
Were they really?
Yes.
That is so smart.
And I freaked out. I went, solo stove! And people turned around and looked at me.
But it's so smart because guess what? If you want open fire pits, but you don't want smoke blowing in people's faces.
Yeah.
And you don't want to have to move your chair every time the wind changes so you don't get smoke in your eyes.
Yeah.
You want the solo stove. It makes it so that the warmth goes out towards you, but the smoke and the weirdness goes straight up into the sky.
And Bethany, big news, very big news.
What's that?
Solo stove now comes in different colors.
Woo!
They have like a burnt orange color.
Oh.
They have like a slate blue color.
Yeah.
They have a light gray. They have a dark gray. Gorgeous. And Solo Stove now makes pizza ovens.
God. God bless.
I know.
I'm so excited about the color thing because I know you and I are personally, like, emotionally invested in Solo Stove.
Yes.
And when colors start coming out, you know the company is doing well. And it's like, oh, thank God our friends at Solo Stove are okay.
And if you're wondering what Solo Stove is, because I don't know if we've explained it to you the
Not
right
yet.
Way.
Nope.
It is a portable fire pit
yep.
that you can get all of these amazing accessories for. But if you just want a fire pit, that's okay too. It is designed to be a smokeless fire pit. So you're not sitting there coughing, your clothes don't smell like smoke. You can actually sit back, relax, enjoy the fire, and chat with your friends without having to shift because the wind is blowing and all of a sudden now you got a face full of smoke.
And it's so easy to start a fire. You're not like trying to get the wind to change. You can get that fire started in seconds.
Yeah.
And afterwards, it's super easy to clean up. You don't have any charred hunks of wood or legal documents you were burning that you're trying to keep from flying away.
Yeah.
Everything is just pure white ash at the end.
Take it to the beach, take it camping, take it anywhere you go.
Yep. And right now you can get big discounts on all fire pits during Solo Stove's 4th of July sale.
Use the promo code TASTE at solostove.com for an extra $10 off.
That's solostove.com, promo code TASTE for $10 off on top of their incredible 4th of July sale discounts. But hurry, the 4th of July sale ends July 10th. Kathleen, it is now just a regular event that I will see people walking around and I look at their shoes and their Rothy's. Like, I'm not even surprised anymore. It just happens all the time. And if you're walking by someone on the street and they compliment you on what you're wearing, it makes you feel like $1 million. You're floating through the rest of your day. And Rothy's is something you're going to get complimented on.
I have these sandy color slip-on sneakers that I've been wearing so much. I've washed them, I don't know, like 5 times in the past month. I even let my niece draw on my sneakers with chalk.
Oh, God.
And her mom was horrified. Like, stop. Don't do that. And I was like, don't worry.
Yeah.
They're Rothy's. I'm just going to toss them in the washing machine and they're going to come out looking like brand new.
Did they come out looking like brand new?
Yeah, they sure did.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, Rothy's take sustainability to the next level. They are super comfortable. They feel like a glove, like hugging your foot, but they are made from recycled water bottles. And because of that, like Kathleen said, they are machine washable. I have a pair of their loafers yeah. in this color mocha, which is like a gray beige kind of color, and it gets scuffed and it gets dirty. And then I wash them and they look brand new. I've washed yes. these shoes so many times. You
yes.
just throw them in cold water, wash, let them dry and, you know, air dry, and you have new shoes.
And the magical thing about Rothy's is it's the kind of shoe, no matter what style you're wearing, because they have the point and the flat, the loafer, the Mary Jane, which
yeah.
I just got, I'm obsessed with. It is the kind of shoe that you can wear with anything.
Yep.
Especially the black color.
Yeah.
It's dressy and it's dressed down
yep.
and you can run to the supermarket, but you can also go to a board meeting in it.
And as we're in travel season, because it's summertime, if you're going to the beach, if you're going overseas, if you're going to visit your family for the weekend, these shoes tuck so nicely into a bag. And again, because they're washable, you don't yeah. have to worry about how often you're wearing them.
And have we mentioned that they're really, really, really comfortable?
So comfortable. So your new favorite shoes are waiting. Discover the versatile styles you can wear absolutely anywhere and get $20 off your first purchase at rothys.com/taste.
That's rothys.com/taste for $20 off of your first order. So Bethany, today I'm going to talk about foot doctor horror stories.
Ooh, podiatry scares.
It is so gross. I don't even want to admit this out loud.
Okay.
I love watching really gruesome podiatry videos on YouTube.
This is going to be a super divisive, polarizing
I know.
Topic.
I know.
There are some people who cannot handle feet stuff.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of my younger sister, doesn't want to see them.
Oh,
she doesn't
really?
Even want to see a foot.
Oh, I'm so sorry, younger
no,
sister
it's
Watson.
Okay. She doesn't listen to the podcast anyway. It's okay. But
yes.
Fascinating.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Do you know, have you ever seen that skin syndrome pop up, I don't know, on TV or the internet, where your skin almost looks like it turns into tree bark?
No.
Yes. Well, apparently that's something that is genetic. And it can happen on your feet. And there used to be a series on TLC about a foot doctor. And I saw once where they had to shave this man's feet because it looked like tree bark had grown over both of his feet. And in the end, he actually walked out of the podiatry room with things on his legs that look like actual feet.
Wait, do we know what that condition is called?
I don't know, Bethany.
I wonder if it's a form of psoriasis. You know how psoriasis can give you like scaly skin?
Oh, yes, yes. I sure do. But the point is that, yes, we're going to talk about some horror stories today from the point of podiatrists.
Amazing.
But podiatrists don't want you to ever feel so embarrassed that you don't go in and get your feet checked out.
Of course.
Fungus on your nails, a wart, plantar fasciitis, some sort of smell.
Yeah.
That you're like, why does it smell that way? Just go in.
Whatever you're bringing in.
Yeah.
They have seen far worse.
Today we will learn that, okay?
By the way, it's called, the tree bark thing is called epidermodysplasia verusiformis.
Say that three times fast. Okay, so I guess I maybe should have started with this, but what has 26 bones, 33 joints, over 100 tendons, 8,000 nerves, and humans as a species wouldn't get very far without them?
The foot.
The foot. Okay. Before you go to the podiatrist, Bethany, wash your feet.
Yeah.
Like you brush your teeth before you go to the dentist.
Every time.
And you should be removing your makeup before you go to the dermatologist.
Of course.
Right?
Yes.
One podiatrist told BuzzFeed, you'd be surprised how many people show up with grungy looking feet. Like they haven't washed their feet.
I wonder if they think it's going to help inform the podiatrist. Like they'll see what my feet are naturally in, or like my natural foot, the flora and fauna that they exist in, and it will help give them more information.
No. Well, you know, funny that you talk about the flora and fauna, because sweat doesn't actually smell. So if your feet smell, it might be like, you know, a sign that something else is going on.
Uh-oh.
So, you know, go to your podiatrist. Yeah. Okay. Have you ever been to a podiatrist?
Never, not even once.
Really?
And I should, because my feet are a mess.
You've never had a wart or anything?
I've had warts on my fingers, but never on my feet.
Really?
Yeah, my feet have, you know, like my feet, They sort of just take care of themselves. I mean, they're not in great shape.
Okay.
But they're not, you know, they're not growing tree bark.
See, you're lucky. I have very problematic feet.
Oh, yeah. They're racist?
Yes, they're so... They don't believe in anybody's choice in anything.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Okay. This comes from a podiatrist who wished that her patient hadn't worn high heels.
Uh-oh.
I worked on a very fragile patient with type 1 diabetes. She was a 34-year-old woman. She came in from time to time looking for bunion surgery, but because her glucose was so out of whack, mm-hmm. we had to like kind of keep monitoring it and wait for the right time to do surgery.
Sure.
Finally, we got the chance to do the surgery. And when the woman came back in for her post-op follow-up, she was wearing freaking high heels, Bethany.
That's going to be the problem with the bunion situation.
The podiatrist said that she almost died watching her frail diabetic patient walk down the hall in high heels. The patient said she was so excited to wear a pretty shoe because she hasn't been able to do so for so many years. Oh, but yeah.
Oh, God. I used to have a woman who did my hair.
Yeah.
Who said she had a client where she would do the most beautiful blowout.
Yeah.
Like long, gorgeous, gentle curls and whatever.
Yeah.
And then the client would be like, thank you. Get up, throw her hair under a baseball cap and walk out.
That's me.
I don't do the blowout.
I do it all the time.
Why do you do a blowout if you're going to mess your hair up?
I mean, like sometimes you get a blowout at the end of your haircut.
And you just put it in a baseball cap?
Yeah. I mean, like, but if you don't have anyone else to see for the rest of the day, who cares?
But it's such a waste of their time.
I know. Like the Dina, who colors her hair, she'll trim me sometimes. And I say, don't bother blowing it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm going to go home and I'm going to do hot yoga and it's just going to end up wet again anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So it turns out when you are wearing high heels, the biggest faux pas that you can make is buying high heels that are the wrong size.
Sure. I mean, it makes total sense.
Podiatrists say that if you're going to wear high heels, opt for maybe a size bigger.
Okay.
And see how that feels.
Okay.
Because there's nothing worse than squeezing your toes into a shoe that doesn't fit.
Yeah, it's easier to put like an insole in a too big shoe than it is to shove everything, as Cinderella's evil stepsisters could attest.
And also if you're barefoot at home a lot,
mm-hmm.
podiatrists say, you know, because you have fat pads on the bottom of your feet.
Yeah.
And those fat pads protect your bones.
Sure.
The fastest way for those fat pads to run out is to walk barefoot all the time.
But our bodies, aren't our bodies, aren't we supposed to?
Bethany, if you're walking home every single day on hardwood or hard concrete with no shoes on,
yeah.
They say that you should be wearing slippers or like I have indoor sneakers.
Absolutely not.
Yeah,
I will not. I will not. No, I'm barefoot all the time.
Well, you're ruining the fat pads on the bottom of your
feet. So be it.
Okay.
It's the way that I am at my most natural. You know I love being natural.
And podiatrists always have to remind themselves to close their mouths when they are clipping patients' toenails.
Oh, no.
Because I came across a lot of stories, this one in particular, about podiatrists who end up with toenail clippings in their mouth.
How do you recover from that?
On Reddit, Mimi Keeners admitted before this guy was discharged, he needed a podiatry consultant. His black gnarled feet had thick yellowed toenails and they'd grown in a circle and they were now piercing the bottom of his toe.
Ow, ow, ow.
So they had to soak his foot and then cut his nails, and then one of the nails ended up in this guy's mouth, in this doctor's mouth, because he was talking and cutting at the same time.
Don't talk and cut. I hope they had some Listerine or something nearby.
Don't talk and cut. And this one is actually kind of like a freak accident. There was a woman in her mid-40s. She was on vacation in Africa, and she was doing one of those safari rides where you ride the elephants. Two elephants got into a fight.
Oh, no.
And the guide jumped off of her elephant, left her on there, and ran for his life. Leaving only her to take control of the animal. She was thrown off the animal and she got stepped on.
Oh, no.
And she had to get like ortho surgery on her feet. She was surprisingly okay. But like that is, don't ride elephants because you could break your feet.
Her foot got stepped on by a lolophant.
By a lolophant. Okay.
Oh.
This next one. I don't want to tell you the gender or how old this person was, but I want you to guess. Okay. After a meticulous repair of an Achilles tendon, a patient was eager to be discharged from a Connecticut hospital. It was summertime and the weather was beautiful. And so the doctor said to this patient, listen, you have a cast on. You have to follow the post-op instructions, the whole nine yards. You got to follow them to a T and you'll come in 2 weeks. And the patient was like, no prob, doc.
Yeah.
Okay. After 2 weeks, the patient came back in because he, oh shit, damn.
Male. It was a male.
The patient had gangrene growing under the cast because turns out you can fit a cast into a water ski. And this guy owned a boat and he was like, I don't want my friends taking my boat without me. And he went freaking water skiing with a cast on.
Kathleen, I'm going to guess this dude was 20s.
He was 24 years old.
Here's the thing. I have had to have surgery before.
Yeah.
And the post-op instructions are so long and so long.
Yes.
That you are kind of like, am I an idiot? But then you realize these people exist.
Yes.
Like if you ever watched the show Botched, you realize that like there was a woman who came in because she needed her breast implants redone because they were all wonk.
Oh my God.
Well, it turns out that the day she got her breast implants done the first time, she also went home and went bikini shopping. Like you're supposed to be resting and like, I think not moving your arms very much or lifting anything.
Lord.
And she was like, I'm going to go intensive bikini shopping.
Oh my God. How stupid.
Have common sense.
How stupid can you be? Well, this is another story that I read. The podiatrist, this guy had surgery on his foot. This was in the early 90s. So they put a plaster of Paris cast on him. Now they do fiberglass casts. Anyway, he was feeling so good that the day before his post-op checkup, he went swimming in the ocean in his plaster of Paris cast. The doctor said he came in the next day. It looked like his cast had melted off of his leg and he had it and they took off the cast and underneath was a huge infection. All of his incisions were red and he had ended up having to go to the hospital. Luckily, he kept his leg, but some people aren't that lucky.
It's like to be a doctor.
Yeah.
You must have to resist the urge to roll your eyes all the time
all
or
the
worse.
Time, yeah.
You know, like you can't punch people in the throat as a doctor.
Yeah.
But boy, I bet you wanna.
And also sometimes it isn't like grandiose gestures of stupidity.
Yeah.
Like we've been talking about. Sometimes it's just as simple as you got a pedicure.
I've heard horror stories.
I haven't been to get a pedicure in quite a long time because I'm very, very paranoid. There's a nail salon in my building. Mm-hmm. Like, I still am afraid to just walk downstairs and get a pedicure because every time I'm like, okay, maybe today's the right day, I look down and I find like a cut or a scratch on my foot and it gives me an excuse not to.
Yeah.
They say the best time of the day to go get a pedicure is when you're the first appointment of the day.
Oh.
Because all the tools hopefully have been cleaned and sanitized overnight.
Yeah. But
there actually, a couple years ago, there was a woman in Australia who lost a leg after getting a pedicure.
I've heard Dateline and like 2020 back in the 90s and early 2000s used to do real like scary stories on like the hidden dangers of your nail salon.
Oh God.
And like nail salons, they are great at being, you know, the majority of them are great at being sanitary and like really being clean. The one I used to go to, they're always opening up like fresh packages of tools and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you just don't ever know.
You never know. I think I used to go to a salon. I wonder whatever happened to my box. I used to pay for a box in my hometown where my own tools were in there.
Yep.
I wonder whatever happened to it because I stopped going there.
Let's get some of those tools back, baby.
Here's another crazy story. Now, this patient had diabetes and like people with diabetes always have foot problems.
Sure.
It sucks. It's just a thing that happens when you have that illness. This podiatrist on Reddit said that a patient with diabetes came in. His legs had started looking like sausages and the room smelled like a garbage dump.
Oh, buddy.
This poor guy had developed an ulcer on his foot. But instead of cleaning and bandaging it, he just put a sock over it.
Oh gosh.
And when the ulcer developed into gangrene and pus began to soak through the sock, the poor guy just put a plastic bag over it.
Please
don't ever be afraid to go to your podiatrist. Feet are like people are embarrassed of their feet for some reason. A lot of shame comes with feet. Just go.
Well, and I wonder too, like diabetes doesn't always correlate to weight.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering if he was a larger man.
Yeah.
Sometimes going to the doctor can be very fraught anyway without foot issues. A lot of people don't want to go see their doctor because they know they're just going to get lectured on their weight.
I know.
And so it's like you put it off and put it off and put it off.
I know.
I wonder if that had something to do with it.
Okay. There was a police officer who got divorced and he's like, I'm not so interested in dating. For years and years and years, he was like, I'm not going to date. Finally, he's like, I want to meet somebody. And he envisioned himself walking barefoot on the beach with his significant other.
Yeah. With his new love.
With his new love. But he had toenail fungus. And you know, a police officer, you think, okay, they're in boots a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just an issue from that.
Totally.
This guy took matters into his own hands.
Uh-oh.
He drank a shit ton of tequila, went to his bathtub. I think he drank the tequila. I think he poured the tequila on his feet.
Sure, okay.
To sanitize. Yeah. Then he took wire cutters and pulled out every single one of his toenails, thinking that they were just going to grow back. He the next day he took a bath. He wrapped each of his toes in toilet paper. And by that afternoon, he had a full-blown case of cellulitis.
What's cellulitis?
It's an infection. It's an infection on, it can become any part of your body. It can happen on your scalp, on your face, on your feet.
It's a bacterial skin infection.
Yeah. Luckily, he went to the podiatrist like the next day and he got antibiotics. He was off of his feet for a month. The good part of the story is that his nails grew in totally fine.
So he didn't learn a lesson.
No, his nails grew in beautifully and he ended up walking on the beach with his loved one.
I thought you were going to say like the nurse who took care of him or the doctor who took care of him was like his new love.
No. Okay. And last story, Bethany. This husband and wife show up to the podiatrist.
Uh-huh.
The wife writes on the intake form, he scratches me in bed.
He's not even writing his own intake form.
Scratches me in bed. So the doctor walks in. And again, it's like they're hit with a smell, which is why if you have smelly feet and it's not just related to like your shoes are smelly, it's something else, go to the doctor.
Yeah, of course.
The doctor is hit with a smell. The doctor sees a thorn-like thing poking up in the middle of the husband's, like the top of his foot, this thorn. Turns out, this is another case of diabetes. This guy had not cut his toenails in so many years that his big toenail grew over the tip of his toe, around underside the bottom of his foot. And then because he had diabetes and feeling in his feet weren't great, it grew up through the middle of his foot and was poking out the top of his foot.
His wife never noticed the actual...
Her only complaint was that he scratches her in bed.
Oh, he had a unicorn foot.
He had a unicorn foot.
Oh my gosh, that poor guy.
I know, I know. So no matter what it is, and you know, and this is really hard to say, especially in this country where healthcare sucks.
Sucks.
And you go and get something done, and because the city you live in is an expensive city, like New York City or whatever, you spend $4,000 on a surgery that a mile away it would have been, I don't know, $200.
Yeah, but you could get it for a sandwich.
It's hard to say. It's hard to, you know, sit here and tell people go to the doctor even if something small is wrong with your feet. But if you can, like, shop around, call for prices, because podiatry is really so much more important than you think.
By the way, speaking of the cost of insurance, just FYI, talk to your doctor. We don't know what we're talking about.
Yeah, we don't know what we're talking about.
But if you have prescriptions, go to, I'm just going to say, Mark Cuban, the billionaire Mark Cuban, has started a pharmacy.
I just heard about this, Bethany.
Yes, he has started a pharmacy. He's only charging slightly above market price.
Yes, yes.
So, for example, fluoxetine, which is Prozac.
Yeah.
Retail price is $22. He's selling it for $3.90.
Wow.
There's a retail price of a medicine that's $437. He's charging $33. So if you don't have insurance.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason, check this out. I think it's called Cost Plus Drugs or something. Again, you have to have a prescription. You got to talk to a doctor. Yeah. But like, this is maybe a good option if you're on really expensive medicine.
I love that. What a great tip.
It's like, this is what a billionaire should be doing.
I know.
You know, like, and drug companies are so mad at him.
Yeah.
But like, they can't do anything. He's Mark Cuban.
Thank you, Mark Cuban.
Yeah.
And also, thank you, podiatrists.
Thank you, podiatrists. Kathleen, more and more of my friends are microdosing.
Yes.
Which is, if you don't know, specifically for THC, it's like taking a super small amount so you're not getting high. And I'm not someone who really ever got high. So I picture quote unquote high as being like seeing the Grateful Dead teddy bears kind of walking in front of my vision.
Yeah.
But no, it just helps take the edge off. Like if you're having a hard time sleeping or if you're having a really stressful day, it just softens the edges without changing your consciousness or making you like unable to function.
We are both full believers in the benefits of microdosing.
Fully.
And that is why we are so, so excited to partner up with Lumi's microdose gummies, because they are these real fruit gummies infused with entry-level doses of THC, perfectly balanced with therapeutic cannabinoids like CBD and CBG, so you can get just the right amount of feel-good.
Yeah. Now, I can't smoke pot. It doesn't do well with my body. I've talked about it before, but I can microdose. Again, it helped me sleep really well. I was kind of stressed out about a couple of things.
Yeah.
And I know that Dennis microdosed too. He has days of high stress and he has Lumi Labs microdose gummies in his fridge, and he'll pop one or two, up to three, depending on what strength you want.
You know, the other day I was just walking around, and you know when you're feeling stressed for no reason, you have nothing to be stressed about, but your shoulders are literally in your ears and you're clenching every single part of your body, but you don't know why. So that happened to me just 2 days ago, and I took two of my Lumi microdose gummies, and all of a sudden I just felt like a cool wash of milk over me. Like soothing white liquid just washed over my body. And I felt like I was like, that's how life is supposed to be.
If you find you're in your head, or if you find that you need a creative boost, or you're in pain, or you want recovery from a workout, try Lumi Labs microdose gummies. They really do taste and feel amazing. And microdose is available nationwide.
To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and then use the code TASTE to get free shipping and 30% off of your first order.
The links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com and then use the code TASTE. Kathleen.
Yeah.
So we're recording this a little bit ahead of time. So as we record this, it's early July.
Yeah.
And I just saw this article on Yahoo, or no, it's from HuffPost. The headline is, I was one of the most famous pop stars in the world. No one knew the secret pain I hid.
Oh.
Do you remember who Darren Hayes was?
No.
He was the one of the two guys, the song, like, every time I see you in your face, I just close my eyes and I am taken to a place where your breath.
Savage Garden?
Yeah, Savage Garden.
The Truly Madly Deeply guy?
Yes.
What about him? Did he die?
No, he wrote this article, so I think he's still alive.
Yeah, okay.
he said that he was like on the Rosie O'Donnell show and he looked all confident, but he was in a deep depression. It sounds like he was in denial about his sexuality and he was really, really, really unhappy. He said he was at the brink of suicide at the height of his fame.
What is that lyric? I should have sung with you on a mountain.
I think he just wanted to stand with you.
You in the sea. What? Those lyrics were my Bible.
Really?
Oh my God. Savage Garden, Bethany?
Yeah.
In the late 90s?
Yeah.
That song used to come on the radio and I used to get all of the feels before feels were feels.
This is so interesting. It sounds like he had a lot of trauma in his early years. A lot, like he was a lot of violence.
Yeah.
And then he also was gay. And still is.
Yeah.
And was so afraid that the more famous he got, someone would dig into his past. What an awful thing. Like, you don't think about it because, you know, a lot of people aren't talking about Savage Garden anymore. Mm. And so you don't think about, like, he is still around carrying with him, like, all of the shame and all of the fear and all of the, like, stuff. You just don't ever know what people are going through.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about how trauma affects you later in life.
Yeah.
Because you can go through something when you're younger and then kind of, I mean, and it's different for everybody, but sometimes in by the time you're 18, if it's kind of over, you're like, I'm strong and I'm independent. And in your 20s, you try to live life, you know, as your own being.
Totally.
And then in your 30s, it kind of, because you've been holding it down for so long, in your 30s, it kind of creeps back up again. And I think for a lot of people, they just need someone to look them in the eye and say, you were a victim, but you no longer have to be a victim.
Yes, totally.
Because the active act of pushing everything down and trying to live life normally you're still a victim.
Yeah.
Because people who haven't been through trauma don't have to spend that much energy trying to be normal.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Even though you're not like currently being victimized.
Yeah, you're still expending so much energy that it shouldn't have to be expended.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And like, I'm kind of going through a little thing. And I know my brother's going through a little thing. Not a little, a big thing. See how I just pushed it down there?
Yep.
And sometimes you just need someone to say, you were a victim.
Yeah.
I acknowledge what you went through.
Yeah.
And it's okay to talk about it and you no longer have to push it down.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I think a lot of people feel like if it comes up, they won't be able to survive how big the feelings are.
Yeah.
And that's it's not real.
Yeah.
But it's a very legitimate feeling.
Of course.
Because it's like, if I start crying, I may not stop.
Yes.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But gosh, you have to.
Yeah.
You really have to.
It's like that feeling when somebody in your family very close to you dies. And in like the immediate month after, you know, if you're with somebody who's lost, you know, a parent or a sibling or something, you kind of don't talk about it with them if they don't talk about it because you're afraid that they're going to cry.
Yep.
But just imagine that feeling that other person has like for 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's insane.
Yeah. I'm of two thoughts about this because I am incapable of pushing down feelings.
Yeah.
Like big ones if they're fresh.
Yes.
I can't push them down. And I am a little bit envious of people who can.
Yeah.
I know that in the long run, it's an unhealthy habit to get into.
Yeah.
But like if someone wants to cry, but they're able instead to like walk into a room and just do a thing. I'm like, no, I have to go cry. Like I can't not, you can, my face gets red. Yeah. My eyes start welling up. I do all of my tricks of like unfurrowing my brow and taking deep breaths. I'll cry.
Or pushing the tongue off the top of your roof, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I know.
But I will. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know. I think that I'm envious in the short term of people who can do that.
Oh, you're going to have a car again? So you can cry in your car again?
Kathleen, I can cry in my car. I can sing in my car.
Yes.
I can, you know.
The car is my favorite place to cry. I know you really like the shower.
I do love a shower cry.
But you don't have a car anymore, but now you'll have a car again.
Yeah. God, I can cry anywhere I want, Kathleen. I'm so excited. Kathleen, what did you learn this week?
Okay. I learned that the best way to get anyone to open an email is to just make the subject line utilities included. Because
Why? Because
I often don't open up like sales, like shopping emails because I know they're just going to take my money. And also like I already know about the sale because I probably follow them on Instagram. Anyway.
Probably.
But Anthropology, on my way to podcasting today, Anthropology sends out this email and I'm kind of like a little bit perplexed by it. It says utilities ApostropheS included.
Okay.
And I was like, Anthropology, utilities included. Like, are they selling an apartment? Like right away, opened it up. And then they have a GIF, you know, this image that keeps changing with different outfits inside the email, a GIF, whatever you want to call it. And it says utility kit. And it is the most genius marketing ploy ever. Because even though I'm not in the market for an apartment, like if anybody sent me an email that said utilities included, I'd be like, oh, I got to see it.
I probably would too. Like, what is this magical place?
I know.
Where utilities are included.
I'm going to send out an email to our taste buds before this podcast gets published.
Yes.
With the subject line, utilities included.
Yes.
And I can guarantee you our open rate is going to be higher than normal.
We should figure this out.
Yeah.
This is good. I like this because you're right.
Yeah.
Just out of confusion, I would open it up.
Yeah. It's other headlines or subject lines, rather. We're popping off. Maybe. Or like, let's get drunk.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
Are you a spam email?
Just
because I'm nervous about opening you up.
You just won $1,000. And inside it's like the latest episode of An Acquired Taste. Skulls and Feet.
It's worth $1,000 in our book.
Bethany, what did you learn this week?
I learned that if you are someone like me who loves an iced chai.
Yeah.
Dunkin' Donuts has a much better iced chai than Starbucks does.
Really?
It is significantly better.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
I love iced chai.
Love an iced chai.
So you came in here today with a Dunkin' cup looking like it was just a
milk.
It was looking like it was a cup of cream. So maybe that's why you like it better.
It's just milk.
It's just, I accidentally ordered a Starbucks drink with cream in it the other day.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it was so good.
It was so good.
It was thick like a milkshake.
Someone in my aerial class ordered a London Fog.
Oh.
An iced London Fog.
Yeah.
But they forgot to put the tea in it. So it was just an iced milk. They were like trying to figure out what was wrong because it was just white.
I ordered online the other day I was trying to sleep. Couldn't sleep, started buying shit online. I ordered a big bottle of concentrate lavender London Fog from this company called Tanglewood.
I think it's a
female-based company out of Oregon. And so you just add your almond milk or whatever milk you want to it and ice. I haven't yet tried it, but I'm very excited.
London, you should try it. London Fog, Tanglewood. Ooh, it's a beautiful bottle.
Right.
It looks like the kind of bottle you would get from an old-timey general store.
Uh-huh,
If we were like wives in the Old West and we had to go into town every month to get some calico and some brown sugar and some of our London Fog.
Well, I mean, if you have a shit product, like, I don't know, that terrible keto cereal that we never did reads for.
No, because it was like, it tasted like poison.
Poison, but their marketing was so beautiful.
I know
they definitely got, we did reads for another keto company.
We love Magic Spoon.
We love Magic Spoon.
Yeah, they don't they actually, we love Magic Spoon because we were nervous because the previous cereal company we had tried tasted like poison. And then they sent us Magic Spoon. And we were like, oh my God, it's so good.
It's so good. So not every keto cereal is created equal.
No. If you DM us, we'll tell you which one it was.
Bethany, where can people follow you on social media?
I am Radio Bethany on Twitter, Ms. Bethany Watson on Instagram. What about you, Kathleen?
Webgirl Kathleen on everything.
You can also follow our show on social media on Twitter at Acquired Podcast.
On Facebook, Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Instagram, Acquired Taste Podcast.
On Twitter. Did we say that? Twitter.
Sure. Yeah, we did.
We said Twitter already?
Yeah. How about a phone number?
Okay. Our phone number is 917-994-0353. We play your voicemails at the end of every podcast.
We also have a P.O. Box, 1717 Hoboken, New Jersey, 07030.
Did we say our email address?
No.
Okay. Our email address is hello@acquiredtastepodcast.com. Nope. It's hello@acquiredtastepodcast.com.
You can also join our Patreon. We have two live shows every month. We also have a study group once a month. We also have book club once a month, and lovely things. Just go to patreon.com/acquiredtaste.
Yes. Our July live shows are on July 12th and on July 26th.
Heck yeah. Our show is edited by Dennis Callow. You can follow him on social media at Dennis, C-A-H-L-O. He is also the co-host, along with me, of our new spinoff podcast, The Check-In, which comes out twice a month right here on your Acquired Taste podcast feed.
When I listen to The Check-In, I often get that feeling that taste buds describe to us when they're listening to the main pod, where I'm the third one in the room.
Yeah, totally.
And then I start bombarding you and Dennis with my thoughts and feelings about what you had to say on The Check-In.
I love it when you do that. It's so fun.
And so it was never really formally agreed, but through The Check-In, Dennis and I have now banned you from talking about David Copperfield on this podcast any further.
This was never officially agreed.
No, Dennis asked you to stop talking about him on The Check-In, and then I just figured it applied to this one, too.
No, but then where can I talk about David Copperfield?
To your imaginary friends.
Oh, my God. By the way, can I tell you something magical about David Copperfield really quickly?
Okay, this is the last magical thing you can ever say about him ever.
Our taste bud, Rosie, was so sweet and sent me her signed 8x10 of David Copperfield. And can I tell you why it's magical?
Why is it magical?
Because I accidentally set a bunch of stuff on Dennis's desk on fire, and the David Copperfield headshot did not burn.
How do you?
It's unimportant.
Hello, everyone. Dennis here. And I thought I'd interject just to let everyone know that the story is rather important because it's pretty funny. You see, we were doing a Q&A with Portland Horror Film Festival online, and we were in my office, and I have a coffee warmer, which keeps my coffee warm. And Bethany had placed a bunch of stuff on top of it, including my favorite stuffed animal, Captain Chonkenbotters, who is this giant, sort of angry looking dog who's shaped like a potato. Also, in that was her picture of David Copperfield. We were doing the Q&A, and during that Q&A, we started to smell something burning, and I kept frantically looking around the room. We couldn't find it, and then we realized where it was coming from, and it was all the stuff, including Captain Chunkenbutters and the picture of David Copperfield. And now, back to the show.
But what you need to know is that the manila envelope it was in burned on one side and the other. It burned completely through, but the David Copperfield headshot did not burn.
See?
'Twas a magic illusion in and of itself.
This is where my bespoke fire extinguishers would come in handy.
This is your reminder to take a deep breath. And taste buds, here's what you had to say this week. Don't start any fires.
Hi, Kathleen and Bethany. I've never called in before, but I've been listening to you for as long as I could possibly remember since the very, very beginning. Just wanted to call because I was just listening to the latest episode, Weird Science, and I literally lost my mind because this crazy thing happened. Bethany was talking about how one of the shows, Hannibal, got canceled after several seasons, and she said she saw the most disturbing thing she's ever seen in a TV show before. I've never watched the show before, but before she even said what it was, I knew what it was, and specifically it was the part about the cop killer who put the man in the box. So I used to watch the show The Following with Kevin Bacon, that was the lead, and they also had that same exact premise of a cop killer, and the cop was put into a box after all his bones were broken and it was blood seeping out, and I literally thought it was the most disturbing thing I've ever seen in a TV show, and I never got over it to this day. So it was so I'm literally losing my mind. I thought it was the weirdest thing ever, and I just had to call in and talk about it because it's just so crazy. But I love you guys so much, and thank you for this amazing podcast and keeping me happy every single week. Talk to you guys soon. Bye.
Well, good morning. I am sitting here at work. It's 5 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. And I may be a little bit clap happy, but I'm here laughing my ass off by myself to Bethany moaning about these pickups she had, and those are so funny. I don't know if this will help anyone or you. Or anyone. So every time I get the hiccups, somewhere I heard that your diaphragm is spasming. So what I do is I take a really sharp inhale and I hold it for like 2 seconds, and then I exhale really fast and really fast inhale again, and I hold it a little bit longer then, and I just keep doing that. And I think, at least in my brain, it works where it like forces my diaphragm to do what I want it to do, and then it stops spasming. And every time I get the hiccups, I do this, and it works. And yeah, really quickly it works too. So it's like exhale. And for some reason it works. That probably sounds really dumb over the phone if you can even hear it, but that's my 2 cents. Anyways, Bethany, I assume by now your hiccups are gone. I hope that you have become more well-rested since that time that you recorded that. So, anyway, all right, have a good day. Bye.
Hi, Kathleen and Bethany. This message is mostly for Bethany and anybody else who needs their life saved after hiccups. Have a teaspoon of peanut butter. Chewing it fixes the breathing and the diaphragm and all those other science-y things that I have no idea of. But yeah, peanut butter can just get rid of your hiccups right away. I hope this helps. Bye.
Hi, Bethany and Kathleen. This is Taste Bud Sadie from Ohio. I'm listening to the most recent pod about the clog in Bethany's sink. A backstory, I work for a water department in wastewater and stormwater, so I'm in charge of sanitary sewer issues, and we do things in the road, you know, not necessarily clogs in people's sinks, but like the clogs in the sanitary laterals or clogs in the main. Well, you guys are saying how, you know, if the plumber's over and you use a toilet and the water's off, you can't flush it. Well, we'll be doing a clogged sanitary lateral, and we'll tell people, hey, like, please don't use your water while we're down in this, you know, 8-foot hole trying to fix your clogged lateral, and they'll use the toilet and they'll flush it, and just turds come out and everything comes out, and the guys down in the hole, and it's like, why would you do that? So anyways, that just made me chuckle. All right, bye guys.
Hi ladies, this is James. I just want to let Kathleen know, if you have that new high efficiency washer, if the inside of it is still wet, make sure to leave the door open, or else you will develop mildew and you'll have to clean it out. It can be really gross. So remember, if it's wet inside, do not close that door because it will seal the water in, and you don't want that. Have a good day, ladies. Bye-bye.
Hello, ladies. It's Taste Bud Cheyenne. This is a question for Bethany. I watched the movie The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent with Nicolas Cage this weekend, and I wanted to hear Bethany's thoughts. I haven't heard anything on the podcast or on the Patreon yet, but I thought it was delightful. I mean, there were some parts in it that were like totally Cheese McGee, but it is amazing, and in my heart, I hope that Pedro Pascal is such a super fan in real life that, like, his acting in this movie was, like, completely genuine because he was so excited to work with Nick Cage. But I just wanted to see if she had seen it yet and what her thoughts are. Have a good day, ladies. Bye.
Turn your tax refund into a new landscape with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Create stunning patios and build strong retaining walls with our huge in-stock selection of beautiful concrete blocks ready to take home today. Plus, easily build and design your own raised garden beds with our garden block. On sale now. Check out our weekly flyer and start saving on landscape blocks now at Menards. Save.